Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
I'd like to say something.
This is Dirt and Spray.
Back in 82, I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Spray.
God, there was one week when you wore sweatpants every day.
Oh, you know what? If they were Sean John sweatpants, it would have been fine. But because they're Costco brand, it's like the worst thing I could do.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in hour number two here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Dirt and Sprague with you on this Tuesday afternoon. We're live out at the Portland Diamond Project Store, 1919 Southwest Morrison. 20% off the merch. They've got these new kick-ass hats. I got one. And then they've got Zenners and Breakside out here giving samples away. A loaded second hour, a lot to get into, but we're going to start it with a former Beaver and investor in the Portland Diamond Project, Darwin Barney, joining us now. What's up, man?
How's it going, guys?
Good.
Good to
good.
Put some faces to the people I listen to in the afternoon.
Yeah, there you go.
So, those two idiots you got to turn into. Yeah, tune into.
You ever text Andy like, you guys are morons?
Well, you know, you never look the way I think that the people on the radio are going to look. It does you guys a lot of justice. I mean,
okay. You
just imagine just these amazing guys in suits.
I know.
They got life all figured out, but I mean.
Now you see us, and we're like disheveled.
Yeah.
We're wearing T-shirts.
I barely showered this morning.
It's a lifetime of fooling. Right. I do the same thing on the field.
Dude, so let's start here. Like, when you first got word about the project and about potentially investing, which you obviously have done, like, when did you first find out about this? And, you know, what was your initial reaction to it all?
It's kind of an interesting story. I guess Craig had reached out to me, you know, right when I was, you know, hanging him up, and I missed the voicemail, you know. So I ended up running into him at a Zupan's and just started talking to him in front of the frozen foods about it. And, you know, from there, I got excited. I was kind of at a low point where I'm a couple months out of being out of the game. And after that conversation, I kind of was sparked about it. Obviously, it was an easy thing to fall in love with, the idea of a major league team in Portland. So, and, you know, Craig and I go a long ways back. I played baseball and soccer with his son, so I've known him for a long time. You know, the connection was there, and the opportunity to work for the group and then to invest, you know, it was a no-brainer for us.
How exciting is it just to envision going to ball games in the summer, like down along the river? When, I mean, you think about that, and I remember the day the whole thing was unveiled. Like, we were sitting, it came out during our show, and we were like, oh, my God, and we spent an hour and a half just talking about it. What kind of fun thoughts do you have about thinking about going to games along the river in the summer?
No, yeah, I mean, that would be a dream come true for a lot of people, I think, me included. You know, my first game was in the Kingdom. You know, so luckily for us, technology has come a long way. We're not going to be playing in the Kingdom or somewhere where Tampa's playing.
Yeah, you don't want AstroTurf out
right,
there.
Yeah, right. But then again, you know, we don't want to be too revolutionary here with what we're doing. You know, but I think it'll be exciting. I think the boardwalk, the ideas that we have, the experience we want to make, you know, it can be an all-day thing, you know. So I think, you know, on the downside, what they say is the traffic and stuff getting in and out. But this isn't going to be one of those events where people just show up at 7 o'clock for the game. I think,
right,
you know, families are going to be there at noon, you know, checking it out, hanging out, you know, getting some of the local food and making a day of it.
Yeah. Well, we love to booze, too. So getting there 2 hours early and having a couple of drinks and then going to the game is absolutely something that can happen.
Yeah, that'll work.
Darwin Barney, our guest. So I've always wondered, too, with the Diamond Project group, you guys are doing such a great job. You're getting the message out there. You've got boards of signatures. You got thousands upon thousands. The store is awesome. Is there a timeline in your mind of the guy that's been connected with baseball, playing in the bigs as long as you did? Is there a timeline where you say, hope to get it by this at the latest, and then if you go past that number, you kind of wonder a little bit?
You know, realistically, I would say personally my timeline is shorter than most. I think things are going to work out for us quicker than we think. You know, but that's just me being optimistic. You know, you look at the collective bargaining agreement in baseball is every 5 years. You know, so in about 4 years, you know, the opportunity to expand is going to happen. You know, you look at hockey, they're at 32 teams. Mm-hmm. You know, baseball is a much stronger backing, I would say, nationally than hockey. So there's the commissioner of baseball, I would imagine, would look at that and say, you know, where can I leave my stamp? You know, and expanding to 32 is an easy and it makes sense. You know, it would help out the divisions. It would even out the teams. So, you know, I just think everything kind of looks positive for us right now.
When you mentioned the next CBA, that's, I'm sure you still have the itch to play, but it's been such a weird off season. I mean, you guys not signing, and there's still a lot of big names out there that are free agents, and it's really weird for longtime baseball fans to follow that. Is this strange to you to see, and how much has it affected you, this slow off season pace?
You know, I think that did affect my career a little bit. You know, you can find guys that are cheaper that maybe can do similar things, but you know, in baseball, numbers are big, obviously. Numbers are everything. So maybe I field a ground ball at 99%, and this other guy will do it for $1.5 million cheaper at 97%.
Right.
So these guys will crunch the numbers and see what really fits. You know, so for me, what happened was you find that the older player is having a harder time getting a job that's guaranteed at the major league level. So now they're forced to take minor league deals, you know, and really just gamble on what they're going to do with their family. They don't know where they're going to be, and it makes it a little bit harder. Where back in the day, the veteran player was much more valued. Mm-hmm. So I think the CBA is going to kind of work on that a little bit. You know, but in the end, baseball players like seeing other baseball players make more money.
Right.
Guys are going to hold out. You know that Harper's going to hold out, you know, to see what Machado makes first because he's going to want a little bit more. And, you know, that's just kind of how it works nowadays. So,
well, how would you want, because a lot of people have brought up the pay scale and the way it's, you know, we got these stories of young guys who are really talented being held in the minors for they get that year of eligibility and the teams can hold on to them longer. And then guys can't get that money at the end of their career. What would the right pay scale be in your mind? The arbitration model, like, how would you like to see it change?
You know, I don't feel bad at all when a player makes a ton of money. And the reason is the owners are making way more.
Yeah.
No matter what, the owners are making more. You look at Houston, for example. They were perfectly happy back in the day with their business model of making money and having a middle-of-the-road team. Now, their plan along the road was probably to build from that, which worked out for them. Mm-hmm. You know, but these teams are making money, whether they win a lot or lose a lot, it doesn't matter. So to see a player make money and people that don't quite understand, you know, we're working just as much or way harder than everybody that's running the team. You know, it's a from when you wake up to go to sleep job. If you want to hit, you know, Scherzer, you know,
right.
at all.
Chris Sale. Yeah.
You better wake up thinking about it. You're watching video before you go to bed. You're planning what you're going to do. You're looking at the numbers. What does somebody throw in a 2-0 count to a 2-1 count? You have to know these things when you step into the box. You know, so there's a lot of homework that goes on to these players.
Yeah. Darwin Barney, our guest right now. We're down at the Portland Diamond Project store. Investor, obviously, in the Portland Diamond Project group and former Oregon State Beaver. Very quick, you just touched on the you got to know the count situations, pitches. Did you ever have a moment where you're in the box and you just completely blanked?
Yeah, that's usually when you're going the best. you know, because quite honestly, it's a game of runs, and the higher your peaks can go and the shorter your downfalls are, those are the good players. The good players don't fall down as much as those average average players. So, you know, when you step in the box, you usually have an idea. But when you're blanked out, that's usually a good thing. You know, when you're thinking too much, you know, it doesn't work out for you. But, you know, for example, I was facing a guy one time who threw 65% changeups. So I go up there and first pitch fastball right down the middle, I take it. Second pitch fastball right down the middle, I take it. And
waiting
I'm like,
for that.
Trust the numbers. You know, trust the
here
numbers.
It comes, right here.
So, you know, lo and behold, here comes the changeup. It's down off the plate, and I hit a double down the line. And it's just, you know, that's the game. These guys are so good that you can't just sit, you know, I'm going to go fastball this way. You can't even cut the plate in half anymore. You have to be looking hard or soft or, you know, get really short and try and put some in play, which right. not many guys do these days because you don't make any money that way.
Right.
Who is the most intimidating guy to face?
I would say,
if you could pick one.
Well, that's pretty easy. it would be Aroldis Chapman early in his career.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Early in his career, he had no idea where it was going. He was throwing 102. He threw a ball over the catcher's head while I was hitting. It went through the backstop, hit a seat, the one seat that was empty. It just blew this seat up. After they tried to make him a starter, unfortunately he got hit in the head and they moved him back into the reliever role. But I think that time trying to be a starter really helped him out, and it's shown. Now he's one of the best closers in the game.
Yeah. Were you John Kruk at the All-Star game against Randy Johnson, where you're just backing out and just giving up? You're like, I'm done with this guy.
That was the plan with him, was let's make him throw two strikes. He has one pitch. Back then he only had one pitch. Just see it. See if you can get a couple balls on you and draw that walk. So I looked back at my numbers, and I think I had 4 walks and 11 at-bats. And you can make that happen on a guy like him. That's a good number in the ninth inning to draw those walks.
Are you good to hang out for another segment?
Yeah, I got time.
Okay, I do want to ask you about this. I think the two biggest things people want to know is team and stadium and all that kind of stuff. So I've heard a couple of things in both regards with you and kind of your role with the group, and we'll touch on that. Darwin Barney joining us, hanging out here at the Portland Diamond Project Store. Come on out, 1919 Southwest Morrison Street, right across from Providence Park. Darwin Barney hangs out with us for another segment. Back with more on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. We've got NFL True or False, or we have Russell Wilson.
One or the other.
I'm not really sure where we're going to go, but, we'll figure it out when it happens. We got Darwin Barney hanging out with us here at the Portland Diamond Project Store, 1919 Southwest Morrison, across from Providence Park. Former Beav, investor in the Portland Diamond Project Group. The two biggest things I talk about with my friends and that I think we get from listeners on the show is stadium stuff, and the renderings came out, and that was really important for you guys. And then the second is the team. I don't want to get you in trouble. I'm just going to tell you how I feel, and I'll get your thoughts.
Sure.
Oakland might be a cool city, but it sucks as a baseball town. We should have the Oakland A's.
I would agree with that statement.
Okay.
There we go.
I didn't know if you'd dive into that, but
I never liked playing there.
Yeah.
It feels like a football game. There's no depth perception. The foul territory is unbelievable. Now, obviously, that is a somewhat historic team. They've been there for a while. They had Jose Canseco. My brother had posters of those guys.
Right, the Bash Brothers.
Ricky Henderson's. Ricky Henderson. But would I take Oakland here? Sure. Yeah. Who wouldn't? I'd take Boston here. I don't care who we get.
Yeah, right. Does that feel like the most feasible at this point for the group is them, or is it kind of like a 50-50 with expansion still?
As a group, it's hard to say. I think personally as a fan, looking at things, Oakland fits the best in the short term. Obviously the expansion, is a really good thing for baseball and a good thing for Portland potentially.
Right.
But in the short term, I think, Oakland's been coming out with renderings for a long time. They've been trying to get backing. They've been having some trouble with that. And, I think some of it is their stadium and their backing just in California in general. I remember we were playing UCLA in college and it was a huge series. Nobody was at the game there. There's just too many other things to do that you would rather do than go watch a baseball game.
Right.
And maybe that's what they're running into. But at the end of the day, as an advisor for the group, I'll take anybody. I'm rooting for Oakland just as a club themselves. I'm a fan of baseball. So if they make it work out for them, that's great. They've been around for a long time. So I know the commissioner is committed to the 30 teams right now, and that's where they're at.
Well, and the tough part with that, too, is you never want a city to lose a team, but I think there's examples, and you mentioned, we asked you your two favorite or your two least favorite parks to hit in, and you mentioned Old Miami and New Miami, and that was an excuse that was used for those fans down there, was saying, well, nobody goes to their games. It's because the stadium sucks. You just got to get them a nice stadium, then everybody's going to go. Nobody goes.
Yeah, that's not always
the key. Is
that
fear there with, because Tampa's going through the same thing and Oakland, obviously. I'm assuming that still should be a fear for people, that even if you get a new ballpark, doesn't mean people are going to show up down there.
Yeah, there's no guarantees in that. I think product, and culture has a lot to do with baseball is a sport that grown men fall in love with. So that just tells you that culture and romance matters. So, Miami, I think, you know, they built the stadium. You know, players like hitting at the newer stadium. The ball flies out of there. I would say the field is not the best, even though they have, you know, pretty good weather. You know, but it's just one of those things where business-wise, you know, maybe it's just hard to get people to be a fan of, yeah, of those teams, right, you know. And I don't know. I'm not in the front office. I don't understand how that works. But I do know that the energy that we have here in Portland, I would say, matches some of the better places I've ever been.
Yeah, I completely agree with that one. Darwin Barney, our guest, my co-host, wants to ask you about the Atlantic League and their rule changes, because they piss him off, and he didn't play pro ball.
I'm an old man. I hate this stuff.
If you also go old man on some of these things. But before we get to that, I found out that you really want to be involved with the stadium rendering stuff of, like, helping give feedback on what players like and what players don't like, and that aspect. Can you give me a couple of those? Because the renderings look beautiful on the pictures and whatnot. But what, as a player, are you most looking for? What really matters to a player when you talk about, all right, here's the stadium and the field?
Right. You know, and I heard you guys talking this morning, you know, with another one of our advisors that's been around a long time that should be in the Hall of Fame. But
yeah, two-time MVP, not in the Hall of Fame, makes no sense to me. But I'm a Braves fan, so I'm biased.
Right, right. And probably the nicest guy you'll ever meet. You know, I think as an advising group, you know, me personally, I'm a traditionalist. You know, I root for baseball. And, you know, Portland is very progressive. We like to do things that haven't been done before. We like to, you know, do things the right way. And I think there's a lot of things that we are doing exactly right, most things. There's nothing we're not. Let me rephrase that. You know, we're trying to build a green stadium. We're trying to do things the right way. You know, but being a traditionalist, I'm just going to kind of lobby for the traditionalist baseball fan, you know, where I want it to feel like a baseball park when we get there. You know, I obviously want it to feel like Portland. I want it to be special. I want it to be different. But I also, you know, want to be able to sit down, eat a hot dog, watch a baseball game, and enjoy it. So I think what we're going to get to at the end is, you know, what everybody wants. You know, there's going to be something for the person who wants to ride their bike to the game and have some drinks and watch it from the outfield. And there's going to be someone who's going to want to go there all day and get the full experience and then watch the game from a really good seat. And I think, you know, our goal is to kind of give everybody what they want here in Portland. So, you know, for me, you know, I can't really touch on the specifics on what I want or don't want, because, you know, what I want is a team and I want a stadium and I want to progress with that. You know, but, you know, those guys out there that are traditionalists that love baseball that way, you know, you can feel okay knowing that there's guys that are pushing for things to feel as much baseball and Portland together as we can.
That's a win-win situation. All right, let me get your thoughts on some of these, okay? So these are the Atlantic League rule changes that they're trying out, okay?
Okay.
Umpire being assisted by a radar system that tracks where balls and strikes are. So essentially a robot umpire.
Brutal.
That's
brutal. I mean, you know, talking to umpires at the end of my career, I was always the guy that was out there jabbering with them.
Yeah.
And I've asked them about that, and they go, do it. We'd love to see how you guys react when that ball is called at the
team.
Who do you yell at?
You can't yell at anybody. Some of these sinker guys are throwing balls that maybe cross the bottom of the knee and the catcher picks it off the dirt.
Right.
That's not a strike, right? But if it touches that box, now you're going to be struck out in the World Series on a pitch that the guy had to block.
By a robot.
So, yeah, and, you know, I just don't see baseball at the major league level going that far.
Okay, what about no players or coaches allowed to visit the mound unless a pitching change is being made?
You know, I don't necessarily like that one as much. Not as much as – it's not as bad as the other one. But I do think there's something to be said for the leader of the infield coming up and telling a rookie that he's all right, you know, and talking about the
– Or a catcher coming out and talking to his guy.
Yeah, see, the catcher thing's a little different. Sometimes some guys – rub me the wrong way when they would take advantage of that.
Okay.
Particularly in the East, they play some long games over there. Some of those guys want to go talk about every freaking pitch. It's like, you guys have done 2 hours of homework for the game. You know what you're trying to do to this guy. So, you know, but when there's a young guy on the mound, sometimes it's beneficial to have somebody come up and be like, hey, you know, what do you think of that thing in the sky over there?
Just to distract him a little bit,
right?
Yeah. All right, what about pitchers coming into the game having to face a minimum of 3 batters?
That's a weird one for me. because, yeah, it would speed the game up, but it would also change things. If you're only trying to get the starter, the rule is, I think, to get that whole I'm going to start the game for one batter and then switch to a right-handed pitcher. Just make a rule about that. I just don't think it's realistic to tell these guys that a left-handed specialist is going to come in to get out Bryce Harper, and then he has to face Zimmerman or whoever's batting behind him.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense for me. Maybe they can switch the rule to after the seventh inning, it doesn't apply. But these guys make a lot of money getting one guy out, where maybe a lefty can't get a righty out. You know, I made a career out of hitting lefties.
Right.
So I was always facing a lefty, and then they'd bring in the righty, and you know, stuff like that would happen. I think it would change the game a little bit too much.
You're eliminating jobs almost at that point, right?
Absolutely.
Barney's our guest real quick.
Go ahead. We're going over through these rule changes. Okay, defensive shifts limited. You have to have two players on each side of second base.
You know, I'm actually okay with that. Most pitchers got more mad when a ground ball double play didn't get turned where it was turned their whole life. Usually the pitchers go along with it because the front office wants it, and that's their team philosophy. But I would say in my career, pitchers absolutely hated it.
Yeah. Last two are moving the mound back by 2 feet and then increasing the size of the bases.
No, the base one is ridiculous. I think if anything, they should just lower the height of the mound back.
Okay.
I don't think you need to move it back anymore. You're going to create more arm injuries that way, I think. Balls breaking differently. You know, let's just lower the mounds back a little bit. You know, guy coming on later, Gunderson, wouldn't be happy about that, being a shorter left-handed pitcher himself. But
right.
Some of those guys are big enough. They don't need to be thrown at a downward angle at us even more so than they already are.
Yeah. All right, man, get you out of here with this. Aside from the group, what do you got going on in life? What's Darwin Barney been doing these days? What's going on in the personal life?
You know, I'm trying to coach. I got 3 daughters, so I'm catching up on that.
Are you going for a boy, by the way? Are you going for that boy? Or
you know, I'm hoping not to. Hoping not to go for it.
But you haven't taken the steps to make it not happen.
Not yet. Yeah. We'll see how
you're not medically cleared yet.
See how talented I am.
Don't put those scissors near Darwin Barney.
But,
get those away.
You know, so I'm trying to catch up on that because if this team, you know, comes in the near future, I'm going to want to go get some experience in coaching or front office stuff or whatever it is so I can be prepared for the job here. You know, on the other side, it's nice to actually see my daughters enjoy sports that way.
But your wife is happy about that as well?
My wife enjoys it. It gives her an opportunity with me being home. She's started a workout facility, interval training in downtown Lake Oswego called Level. You know, and it's going really well. We're about 3 months in, cardio-based workout. You know, it's all about the vibe and the feel you get there. It's a little bit different than the super, you know, organized, you know, look at the paper and follow it type classes you'll do. So it'll be a little different than that.
Absolutely. Well, good stuff, man. Thanks for hanging out with us for 2 segments.
Yeah,
congrats again, by the way, as being an investor and being part of this awesome group. And when we get baseball here in the Oakland A's or the Portland A's, we'll have to have a beer at the first game.
Absolutely. Hopefully I'll be working, though, so I'll be able to do it with you guys.
Well, we'll do it after the game. We'll,
celebrate after the game, right?
There we go. Darwin Barney, former Oregon State Beaver investor in the Portland Diamond Project, our guest. All right, coming up next, Russell Wilson or NFL true or false? I'm not really sure, but we'll find out next.
Hey, welcome back in 1:36 on a Tuesday afternoon. Thanks for being with us. We're hanging out here at the Portland Diamond Project store. Awesome time, 1919 Southwest Morrison. Stop by, say hello, sign the big board, grab a we got hot dogs, we got beer up in here. Sun's out right now.
Sun's out, guns out, baby. Let's go.
Depending on where you're at in the city, I'm sure it's one of those typical Portland days where it's, you know, downpouring 1 minute and then sunny the next, which I love.
I'll make a vow right now for my pasty ass. The first sunburn in the ballpark, I will not complain about it.
No complaining about sunburns in the ballpark. So we're hanging out here. I don't think we got Russell Wilson. He's too busy swimming with dolphins somewhere.
Yeah, the phone has not rung here in the studio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's hanging out right now on vacation with Ciara.
If he does call, Swagger, do you have the Ciara bed music to play to kind of intro him in or no?
I was not provided that. No. Is it in the system?
I'm sure there's – I mean, sure she had a hit in, what, 2003 was her last hit?
She had a couple big hits,
But she wants to move to New York and make music, I guess.
We'll see if Russell Wilson calls. If not, it'll be on later, I'm sure, with Isaac and Suk at some point today. Let's get to it. NFL true or false. What do we got today, Swigard?
Well, with all the reports of all the orgy of commerce that's about to take place tomorrow when the new league year starts –
we're dropping an orgy. I like it.
In honor of that, we'll start with wide receiver Antonio Brown getting his wish. He's going to be dealt to the Oakland Raiders. We'll see if that goes through Wednesday or how quickly it gets done. But true or false, Brown will lead the NFL in receptions for the 2019 regular season.
This is false. This is false.
That he'll lead the NFL?
That he'll lead the NFL in receptions. I do think he can have a big year there, but leading the NFL in receptions maybe not an elite quarterback, I'm going to go false on this one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Derek Carr not elite, huh?
I think the jury is still out on that one.
Let me just put out, if you had an orgy with NFL players, that's got to be the worst possible orgy you could be a part of. But on this specific question, I will say that this is false as well. I think they are going to work to get him the targets. I do not think he is going to get the most receptions in the NFL, and that's going to somebody else. I will say this is false.
I think this is true. I think they're going to force feed him the ball. I think and Carr will make it a note. Now, a lot of it might be short crossing stuff underneath initially, see if he can break one. I don't think he'll lead in yardage, but I think they're going to throw him the ball probably close to 200 times the entire season. So don't be surprised there. All right, number two, Frank Gore, continuing his Hall of Fame-worthy career with the Buffalo Bills in 2019 when he signs a free agent contract with them. True or false, Gore will finish his playing career as the number two leading rusher in yards all time behind only Emmitt Smith?
This is false. He won't get to that number. In fact, I think this is going to be his final year. Unless he tries to have some cute swan song with the Niners.
He's 35 years old.
Yeah, this is year 15 for him. He had a good year last year for Miami. A lot of people didn't think he put up production, and he did. I do not think he'll get to number two, though. I think he will finish three. I think it's going to be tough. If he can stay healthy, I think he can get three, but he needs 522 yards. That's not going to be easy at the age of 34, 35.
No, when he gets to number two, you're looking at 2,000 yards.
That's
and
definitely
at
false.
This point in his age, I don't know how many years that would take him. Not to say he can't have a decent year this year, but he's not necessarily that kind of back anymore. I will say false, and I hope for his health's sake. Like, it can't be healthy to play football that long. Like it, at some point,
maybe it is for him.
At some point, he needs to walk away. I'll say this is false.
Yeah, this is false. It's I think that's just too much. Even if he'd probably need three seasons. And that's getting, what, 600 or 700 yards in three seasons just rushing?
Yeah.
That's asking a little too much. So he'll probably finish third.
The one question I have, we talked a little bit about Frank Gore yesterday because it broke that he signed with the Bills. Yeah, I tweeted that he is going to have one of the most underrated careers in NFL history.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, I was trying to think, is there anybody that's had more underrated career?
I think you could throw Larry Fitzgerald into that
Larry
category.
Larry Fitz?
Yeah.
Marvin Harrison.
I don't know if Marvin's is. He was with Peyton. He got a lot of exposure.
I'm talking about
guys people talk about, you know?
I think if you throw the question out there of, like, greatest wide receiver of all time, Larry Fitzgerald could be a name that people forget about.
He's the second best one, in my opinion.
And the numbers bear it out where he belongs in that category.
Right.
Yeah, I would say Fitzgerald is one.
All right, next up, number three, the Green Bay Packers reportedly adding three defensive players via free agency this week to bolster a porous defense, couple of pass rushers, and a defensive back. True or false, the Packers will win the NFC North Division in 2019.
Oh, this is false. I love me some Aaron Rodgers. I picked him last year to win the Super Bowl.
Who wins the division?
I think Chicago does. I think Chicago builds. I think they have a Ram-like year where they build on what they established in year one. Heartbreaking playoff loss at home. But no, I think this is false. I think the Bears win it.
I think this is true. I love my boy Aaron Rodgers.
You're going to die on the Aaron Rodgers hill.
I will, but I'm also picking him over one of my other hills I'm dying on. I think Kirk Cousins will only be a wild card this year.
Okay.
But Chicago's going from, I believe, the third easiest schedule in the NFL last year to, like, on metrics, at least as of right now, one of the top five hardest schedules in the league this upcoming season. And did you see they already had to rework the contract of Khalil Mack to free up cap space to go out and spend this offseason?
Well, you know who they're trying to get? There's a rumor they're trying to be the dark horse in the Le'Veon Bell.
Le'Veon Bell sweepstakes. We'll see. I think there's another team out there that'll pay more than Chicago can, but they already had to rework that 1 year in. We've seen teams that have this kind of run, surprise, led by a great defense, fall off a little bit. It all comes down to Trubisky. The defense is great.
Right.
Jacksonville's a good example of that. He's not as bad as Bortles, but they were in an AFC title last year, couldn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
So I think I trust Aaron Rodgers more than I trust the Green Bay Packers defense. He just has to stay healthy. He got hurt in the first half of the first game last year and wasn't 100% probably all season. They bolstered the defense. I'll say this is true.
This is true. I think so. I think the Vikings, they're going to lose Latavius Murray. I don't know. And You wonder about now the depth at running back for them. Kirk Cousins didn't quite go the way he planned there in his first year. The Bears will have a much more difficult schedule. So, yeah, I think the Packers always health a concern, but I like them in 2019. Finally,
By the way, on the Bears, did you see that they signed a new kicker? Thanks to a listener for reminding this. They signed a new kicker, and his last name is Blewett. Not a joke.
Wait, who's that? I've never heard of that.
I remember the kid from college. I can't remember where he's from, though. Is he from Pittsburgh? I think he's the Pittsburgh.
Blewett kicker.
Chris Blewett.
Chris Blewett is his name. Chris, hold on. I'm Googling.
Well, we just need him to miss a playoff kick, and it'll be perfect. Very poetic.
College stats. He played at Pittsburgh. Swag's right. Yep.
Don't ask me how I remember that. New York Giants have lost safety Landon Collins. Reportedly not going to draft a quarterback in the first round. They could be shopping Odell Beckham Jr. True or false? The Giants will finish 2019 with the worst record in the entire league and get the number one overall draft pick.
Woo! Oh, this is a hot take, but this is true.
They're going to have the worst record in the league.
Yes.
Who's going to be worse than them?
There's a lot of teams that might be bottoming out. First off, we don't know what Arizona's going to look like next year. If Rosen's still their quarterback, they could suck.
No, Cliff Kingsbury's the answer, baby.
Miami is reshuffling the entire deck. And
okay, you're right. I'm going to say false. I forgot about Miami. They are blowing it up, and they're going to draft a guy and play him, and he'll get beat a lot. They will be close, though. I really do believe that. I think they will be near the bottom.
This would honestly be, if you're smart in New York, you would tank this year.
I would.
Start Eli for one more season, have it be a swan song, even though he sucks.
Yep.
Start him for one more year, and then dive into next year's quarterback class.
Well, they might take Haskins, though. They might not want to do that.
Yeah. But this is false.
I saw some reports that they're going to pass on Haskins for certain, so... No, this is true. One, all the other three teams in their division all have designs on making deep playoff. You're seeing Washington spending money like crazy. The Eagles are all in. Cowboys.
Wait. Let's pause. Just because Washington signed Landon Collins to an insane contract, does that really mean they're trying to win? Who's their quarterback?
Case Josh Johnson? Keenum is their quarterback.
Keenum.
Come on. Let's not act like Case Keenum's that much better than Eli Manning.
Well, at least Keenan can, you know, throw it from me to you. Eli's
That's actually
done.
Quite a distance right now, Swagger.
I know.
Quite a distance.
I know. So, no, I think this is true. I think the Giants are going to be horrible.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're going to do defensively. Yeah. No, they're done. I think.
Spoken like a true Cowboy fan.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There you go. NFL true or false every Tuesday, slightly after 1:30. What was that? Was that better than Russell Wilson? What do we think?
It was, yeah. We're supposed to talk with Gunderson at 2, and I feel like Gunderson wants to come on right now, but he won't say anything.
He wants to get out
of
here.
So he's playing on his phone. He's like, I'm waiting for these D-bags to just bring me on. You want to come on right now? Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's talk about baseball.
We're doing that next. Gunderson's hopping on. And we'll have fun stories about how he used to dominate Sprague in the league.
He made me cry.
Dominate.
I'm not kidding. I'm not Sprague kidding when I say that.
What's it like to make Brandon Sprague cry?
Oh, we'll find out. Glorious.
We'll find out next on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness, as low as $9.95 a month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. Welcome back in. Joining us now is Kevin Gunderson in the building. What's happening, man? How we doing?
Doing great. How you guys doing?
We're doing good.
We got
a national champ in our midst. We have
a
former big leaguer in our midst. We have a owner of a pitching academy and a dominator of one Brandon Sprague in Little League Baseball.
Owned me in Little League Baseball, yeah.
Now, how does it make you feel when he tells you? You made him cry when he was like 8 years old.
You did. By the way, I think I was 10 or 11. I was a little older than 8, so it was even more embarrassing.
Sometimes you have no mercy when you're out there, you know, no matter what the age group. I told the kid last night it's either you or the hitter that has success. You got to make up your mind. So
right.
That's true.
I apologize for causing some tears.
No, dude, I was overly sensitive. I lost $20 because I couldn't even get a foul tip off yet. And, you know, I knew the minute I faced you and Eddie Koons that this was unfair, that you two should not be in the same league as me But that didn't matter to the parents because they wanted to win baseball games, and you guys were always good.
Eddie Koons was much more intimidating than I was.
He was a big kid.
All the way through up. I mean, just an absolute monster.
Yep.
I could only imagine him from 46 feet standing there. And I'm sure we faced each other many a times. I'm getting a little old here and losing my memory. But even in college, guys would say, man, Eddie is a big individual to face.
Yep.
Imposing figure on the mound.
A little scary back. What was it about you at a young age? Was it just you just had more velocity? Was it a breaking ball? Like what clicked for you at a young age that made you kind of realize, like, I could do this for a while?
You know, I've always been really competitive, always been, you know, quote unquote, maybe undersized. I actually didn't throw a breaking ball until the summer after my sophomore year in high school.
Oh, really?
I threw a knuckleball, had a changeup. I was just aggressive. I kind of took the mentality, I'm just going to come right after you. And sometimes it worked out in my favor, and other times, you know, guys would smack the ball around. But that's going to happen at any level.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like in college, too, you took that to a whole other world almost with the competitiveness. And
yep.
You were a fiery guy, man. You'd get people out in the World Series or even throughout those seasons, and you were not a guy afraid to shout and kind of fist pump and let somebody know that, yeah, screw you, go to the bench. I'm done with this inning.
Know, when you get up to that level, it's just you got to get three outs. Sometimes come in for a six-out save, four-out save. It just kind of depended on the situation. But, I mean, everybody's dependent on you, right? Our starters would do a phenomenal job of keeping the lead low, and our offense obviously did a good job with getting us a lead.
Right.
And then it turns to you, and everybody's relying on you, either the hero or the goat, you know, and you just kind of you get into that situation. And I remember almost every time I'd run in from the bullpen, you know, Darwin would look at me, and he was like, you got that look. I love it. You got that look. And you just had to put yourself into kind of an alpha dog mentality when you're out there, because when you're facing the likes of, you know, UCLA and Arizona State, those guys, they want to win.
Yeah.
You know, and so if you're out there soft, and our pitching coach used to always say, if you're scared, get a dog and get a big one. So just took an aggressive mentality out there.
That's a great line. We're talking about Kevin Gunderson, former Oregon State Beaver, drafted by the Braves, been around. He owns a pitching academy now. We want to find out about all that.
Yep.
Let's start, though, with just the Portland Diamond Project. I mean, you're from the area. We're just talking about playing Little League in this city. Oregon State, obviously, alum. What is it that gets you so excited about wanting to be involved with the Portland Diamond Project?
You know, when you're fortunate enough to play in pro ball and you're around, you know, the big league team and spring training, and you're spending time and you see how the excitement level just from a spring training standpoint. We obviously live in a beautiful city, a sports city, and just the thought of baseball coming here is amazing, right? And I know there's it's a long process, it's a slow process, and it takes some time, but I just think this city would soak up baseball so much. Just being able to take families out there on a weekend or a weeknight and be able to watch baseball is something special.
You know, I know that there was a great documentary on Netflix about the Mavericks, and that was really cool to watch. Obviously, the Beavers and the Rockies, et cetera. Do you feel like, though, in a way that you and Darwin and Oregon State kind of might be a catalyst for pushing even more love of baseball here in our state with the run that you guys surprisingly made, and now it's this dominant program within the country?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I heard Kay say earlier, you know, who would have thought 30 years ago that Oregon State would win a national championship? And our roster was primarily Northwest guys. So be able to be part of that and kind of start a little bit of that excitement and that movement here in the state, it's special, you know, and just to be able to, the thought that, you know, Oregon State is a small part of maybe that contributing drive to get baseball here is something special.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about the Pitching Academy. I mean, that's something I'm sure you're passionate about. Obviously, you know a lot about it. How did you get into it, and how's that going for you?
Yeah, I started actually when I was still in pro ball. I was approached in 2000, fall or the winter of 2007, so right after or right before my first full season in pro ball, about doing some lessons. And I had some downtime, and I was really just focused on training, getting ready for spring training. And I started to do it, and I started out with maybe one or two clients. It wasn't a huge time commitment, and I just started to enjoy doing it. And so I'd go play pro ball, and I'd come back in the wintertime, and my clientele gradually started to increase. And then when I stepped away from the game, I started doing it full-time in 2012, and then ended up opening up my own academy in 2014, and it's fun. I'm active in the game. I'm around some great young student athletes that are passionate, both from the lower levels of youth and the age groups, and then all the way up through high school guys.
Right.
And been blessed with some phenomenal clients that have moved on to college, and they'll come back in the offseason or wintertime and, and train with me. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. We just tweeted out your account, too, the K. Gundy pitching one on Twitter, so give it a follow as well. You know, you can encounter from time to time some mouthy kids. So I'm just curious if you ever had a moment where a kid was mouthing off, not listening to you, and you just roll the tape of you dominating people and saying, I know what I'm talking about here.
Yeah, I've thankfully have not encountered too many kids that that act like that. I don't think it's not my personality to bust out a highlight tape of me throwing back in the day. But, again, I'm blessed with a lot of really special young kids that I'm able to work with and touch on a daily basis. And it's a unique profession. When some people ask, somebody asked me 2 days ago, is this, you know, what do you do for a living? Like, this is what I do for a living. And the look on their face was like, that's pretty cool. Unique hours, but I love it. Yeah. I love it every day. It presents different challenges. Every kid's different. Every kid has different pitching deliveries. And so it's fun to think outside the box a little bit.
Well, and how much has it changed for you as a coach to follow what baseball is doing, how it's evolving in the way that you coach and the way that you even learn still, because you have so many different new things now?
Yeah, I'm a constant learner of the game. I think if you, in my personal opinion, I think if you are doing what you did, you know, 10 years ago and only doing that, you're going to get passed up. There's a lot of foundational things that I've done for my entire life that I carry over now, but the time's changing with technology. I've starting to adopt bringing in pitch technology into my pitch development phase, you know, a device called Rapsodo, which has taken over Major League Baseball in the college ranks, track spin rate and spin direction, spin efficiency. It's a phenomenal tool to use. So it's exciting to blend in kind of the new approach to the game with the old school approach, as long as you're open-minded to it. That's the biggest thing. You can't be stubborn with it.
It is wild. I imagine telling yourself 15 years ago that you would be using technology like that.
It's
keep
amazing.
A track of your spin rate. And
every pitch. You can, you can chart every single pitch that you have. You can accompany a data with it. You can go back a year from now and look at a pitch that was, you know, on March 12th or whatever. And it's just,
it's wild.
It's special. And the game has gotten more challenging. It's gotten only the competitiveness of it is insane at this, at the higher levels. And so if you're not staying up to date with what's going on, you're doing a disservice to your kids, because there's a chance that they could get passed up by somebody else that's doing it.
Well, a two-parter for you, Kevin, then, is one, obviously, I always felt like with Casey's guys, he always identified people that were like him, emotionally driven, competitive, et cetera. And I think that's what helped your success so much, is you just want to go out there and prove everybody wrong. What are you doing to combat the competitive itch that you still get? Maybe is it coaching, or do you do something else? You play rec league baseball or something? And the second part is I need the best story on the bus. I need a minor league story on the bus that maybe not a lot of people know about.
Yeah, I feel my competitiveness with my coaching now. I have two young boys who'll be 4 and 7 this coming month. I'm going to venture into being a head coach of first grade coach pitch. So I got to get my body and arm in shape to be able to throw from 20 feet away.
Yeah, bring the heat again, you know?
You know, my cousin's here. It's funny you ask about rec league. I haven't got into the adult league baseball stuff yet. I get an invite all the time by him and some other friends to come out. It's just I haven't done it quite yet. And the reason is very simple. I'm extremely competitive when I get between the white lines. And I'm not quite as good of shape as I was in my playing days. And so my competitiveness and what my body will allow me to do, I will butt heads really, really, really hard. So there'll be a time I told him I'd get out there and throw a couple innings. And, you know, I always tell him and my uncle who pitched in the big leagues, I wouldn't do well with somebody that's 40 years old and talking trash to me, because I would be liable to put one right in their back. That's just the way I operate. It's just in my blood.
Right.
That's the way you're wired, man.
Favorite bus or pro ball story. We had a huge trade with the Angels when Mark Teixeira came over, and we got one of their minor leaguers who was one of their top prospects, relief pitcher. We're in our bullpen, and this is his second day, and he said, hey, have you guys ever played the money game? And we're like, what's the money game? And he's like, we put our bullpen was in left field in Double A in Mississippi. It was field level, and they had this little pavilion that was wrapped around. And he said, we'll put three cups on top of home plates. We had three home plates, Gatorade cups, put a few rocks in there to weight them down. If you will tell the fans, if they make a quarter in the cup, they get a baseball. If they make a dollar in the cup, they get a bat. So we went to our clubhouse guy, and he gave us boxes of the biggest bats that we had in stock that no one used. So we had like six boxes of bats. We had a huge bucket of old BP balls. And so we started advertising the game. It was on a Thirsty Thursday.
Yes.
The Royals play for the first four innings minimum and just kind of see the flow of the game before we had to start mentally getting ready
to potentially
pitch. The first night, I believe we made a little over $600 in four and a half innings. And people are throwing quarters and they're like, figuring out, like, if we make a $10 bill, do we get 10 bats? We're like, yeah. So people would be crumpling up $10, $20 bills and trying to launch them into the cups. It helped because somebody made a quarter in the cup early.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, they're not going to pay out. We tossed a baseball, and they're like, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
And then somebody made a dollar, bounced off the turf and into the cup. We took out a bat, was still in the wrapper, tossed it up to them. And we ended up making some pretty good money that we divvied out to all the bullpen guys to help pay for our clubhouse dues.
Oh, cool.
We got through about four or five different games doing that, and we made the big mistake. A kid brought his lunch money and spent all of his lunch money trying to make it in the cup. He asked for his money back. We didn't give his money back. His mom went and complained to the general manager of the Atlanta Braves. So,
wow.
Needless to say, our game ended after about five games.
Teach the kid a lesson, Mom. Let him lose his money.
You're going to go hungry. Come on.
He was like 13, 14 years old.
He knew what he was doing.
He did.
That's great. You got a couple more minutes to stick
Absolutely.
Around with us?
Yep.
All right. We'll be back with more. We're hanging out here. Portland Diamond Project. Stop by. Say hello. Load a final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on the Fam.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.